Ambulance is the latest Michael Bay action movie, and if you think you know exactly what you're going to get into because it's Michael Bay, well, you'd be correct. It's 2+ hours of pure, unrelenting adrenaline, gunfights, car chases, explosions, and of course, dizzying camera work.
Ambulance stars Yahya Abdul-Mateen II and Jake Gyllenhaal as adoptive brothers who get caught up in a bank heist gone spectacularly wrong. And true to the title, it involves a high-speed, high-stakes ambulance chase. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Aisha Harris. And today we're talking about Ambulance, a pop culture happy hour from NPR. Joining me and Stephen today is Weekend Edition producer Danny Hensel. Hi, Danny. Welcome back.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me to talk about Ambulance, because we have to emphasize the L.A.
Oh, yes. That's true.
Yes. Also joining us is Daisy Rosario. She's a podcast producer and storyteller who you may have heard on the Moth Radio Hour. Welcome back to you too, Daisy.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here to talk about Ambulance.
As people can tell, we're probably going to have a lot of fun talking about this movie. So in Ambulance, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II plays Will Sharp, a war vet with an infant and a wife dealing with vaguely alluded to health issues. In need of cash to help cover their medical bills, he turns to his adoptive brother, Danny, a loose cannon and career criminal played by Jake Gyllenhaal, who's delivering his version, I guess, of an unhinged Nick Cage impression here. Danny brings Will in on a big score to steal $32 million from a bank. But, of course, it doesn't go down as planned. A bloodbath ensues, leaving Danny's crew dead. The brothers take two hostages along for a chaotic ride in an ambulance. Cam, an EMT, played by Aza Gonzalez, and Zach, a wounded rookie cop, played by Jackson White. All of this takes place over the course of one day, unfolding across the uncharacteristically traffic-free streets and highways of L.A. Ambulance is directed by none other than Michael Bay, master of abundant cinematic destruction, and is written by Chris Fedak. It's based on the 2005 Danish thriller Ambulansen. Now, Daisy, let's start with you. What did you think of Ambulance?
Oh, man. So this is one of those movies that I was like kind of excited to go into and just watch a big action movie. I was like, I'm just looking for fun and to turn off my brain, and it wasn't that. It started that way. It started pretty promising. I cared about the characters and I was like ready for it. And then it just really managed to outstay its welcome. It just kept going. I did not know what was happening. And the credits were short. That is a sign of a lack of CGI. Yeah. But yeah, the credits were short.
That is a ringing endorsement. Credits. Danny, how about you?
I think I'm a little more positive than Daisy. This is actually my first time with a Michael Bay movie, which...
Wait, you were a Bay newbie.
Sure, yeah. But, you know, as far as the majority of this goes, it's an extremely high-octane movie. The camera is always moving. He is really enjoying what I guess was a birthday gift of like 20 drones that he employs liberally throughout the movie. I think there are so many set pieces of this movie where the practical effects create a sort of symphony of destruction that I could not help but really love watching. There's one set piece in the LA River where you have a shot with the ambulance and like three helicopters somehow fitting into the screen that I found irresistible. And then I also, I think, have to spotlight the Jake Gyllenhaal performance, who I think in like every movie gives like 125%, and sometimes it's a little off-kilter for the movie, but here I think it really works. He's this like chaotic motor mouth person who is also pretty incompetent at being a criminal, but somehow it makes for an entertaining movie. I also was sort of surprised by, and I really should not have been surprised by this given that the name of the movie is Ambulance, but how much of a medical thriller this was as well. There's like three different surgeries going on, which kind of hard to sit through, but also extremely thrilling. I mean, there's like a Zoom surgery sequence that really had me at the edge of my seat. And then like occasionally thinking, oh my God, they're doing surgery over Zoom. This is ridiculous. But, you know, I had fun.
Yeah, definitely got some like Grey's Anatomy vibes going with the series. Stephen, how about you? I want to hear all about your thoughts.
I have so many thoughts, Aisha. This movie is so convoluted. There are so many characters. At one point, at least an hour into this movie, we suddenly like meet this guy from the FBI and he's in couples counseling. And it's like, it is way too late in this movie for me to be meeting new characters. This movie should be so simple, and yet it is so weirdly Byzantine. The logic, I mean, Will, that played by Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, the great actor who I love in everything, Will accidentally shoots this cop. And so part of the stakes of keeping the cop alive are, like, if the cop dies, he's going to get in trouble. Never mind that they have pulled off this massive bank heist in which many people have died, and the cops chasing them are constantly getting in these massive fiery car crashes. But if this one cop dies, suddenly, oh, the stakes are real. The score is so ludicrously overdriven. At one point, fairly early in the movie, there is an allusion made to the sacrifices made by our brave fighting men and women in uniform. And the score kind of goes to signify, all it needs is like taps. Everything is underlined. Everything is overcomplicated. It is at least 40 minutes too long. And yet, you know what? Fine. That's my blurb. Put it on the posters. You know what? Fine.
Yeah. So some of my notes that I scribbled in the dark in the theater while I was watching included, what is with the rando shaky cam?
So much shaky cam.
This whole thing is shot like a trailer. This is a quote from a character who literally just got run over by a car and is somehow not like screaming in agony. What did you do to my legs? Like, I also think that like, drones may have been the worst thing to happen to Michael Bay, because not even from like an artistic standpoint, from a sitting in the theater as a viewer, it made me really, really nauseous. And the way the camera was moving for no reason, no rhyme or reason, just like swooping and going in and out and like all these places where a camera normally wouldn't be able to go. And I think he's just having so much fun with the technology, but like, I couldn't tell what was happening half the time. The action sequences, even though, yes, give me all the practical effects, I'm really glad that most of the effects were still practical and he's still working in that mode, I still found it really, really difficult because of the editing to know what was happening. Like, you'd see a car that you didn't see blow up just flip in the air. And then you have Jake Gyllenhaal and Yahya trying to do their best to, like, act with this very, very thin script. To me, I actually think, Danny, you mentioned Jake was like kind of perfectly calibrated. I don't think Jake was dialed up enough for me for what was going on here. Like, I wanted a bit more. There were a lot of lines. He had a lot of throwaway lines, including, and this is a direct quote, "Well, I wish I didn't have herpes, but we all got to go with what we got." That is a real line that he delivers. It was so absurd to the point where the comedy that was supposed to be happening here, and this is where I'm going to sort of bear with me for a second here. It reminds me a little bit of Deepwater, the recent movie we just talked about, directed by Adrian Lyne, and where that director is kind of working in the same mode as he's become known for, like the erotic thriller, The Fatal Attractions, Unfaithful. But he seems to have realized the way he can parody the genre that he's become known for. And I think that's what's happening here too, because there's, of course, Michael Bay sort of self-referencing himself and also trying to throw in these really just all of these quips. All these people talk as though they're like Grey's Anatomy, like they're in a Shonda Rhimes world where they're making all these quips while crazy things are happening, but it's not quite working. The jokes aren't landing for me. And I wish that he had just maybe kept it a little bit more straightforward, because then I think it would be funny here, or like more enjoyable. And like Daisy, I love this genre. Like Fast and Furious hits all the right notes for me. And this didn't do it for me.
I think part of the problem too is that, you know, as Stephen underlined, the score helps us understand who's good and who's bad. But I think what gets complicated in the movie is, I don't think Bay is really sure whether he wants the heist to succeed, who he wants to pull through. The cops are good, but they're also bad because they might target one person, but not the other. It just ends up being a mess. And every scene, you know, is not cut together with any sort of spatial logic. And so you watch all these stunts, which are expertly produced and thrilling, but ultimately to what end? I mean, again, I have a simple mind. I enjoyed watching the stunts. To me, that is maybe enough. But, you know, there will be dialogue scenes, especially in the beginning when Yaya and Jake Gyllenhaal are with each other for the first time in the movie, where, like, they're barely in the frame. It's almost avant-garde cinema. And it's kind of a miracle that I think, like, even those dialogue scenes have any, you have any sense of understanding of what's going on. You will also not believe the amount of times you hear about these freaking pink flamingos that should have gone to Turks and Caicos that Jake Gyllenhaal's incompetent, like, incompetent.
Played by Wale, this, like, sidekick or whatever.
He is the least competent person you have ever encountered in a movie, to the point where, not only, it's not even to the point of straining credibility, it's like, he's like Amelia Bedelia, you know, like.
So are you saying Jake Gyllenhaal's character is like that, or the Wale sidekick character?
Oh, the Wale character. I mean, it's like, compared to Wale, Jake Gyllenhaal's a genius.
So much to add.
Yes, yes. Let's do talk about Jake.
Let's talk about Jake Gyllenhaal, the genius, who has choreographed this incredibly complex heist and introduces Will, like, we need you to join this heist. It begins in 3 minutes.
Yeah, someone called in sick.
Someone called in sick. Or it's like, why couldn't you just do the heist you were doing anyway and just give him the money instead of bringing him in for the... Oh, my God. So the thing about it is, like, this is a Michael Bay movie. Yes, we've talked about that. We kind of know what we're going to get. But it seems like by the end of this film, I don't think it's spoiling much to say that, like, there is a clear better brother.
Oh, sure.
But, like, the fact that they are... One is black and one is white. And at the end, there is this sort of, like, redemption in a way that I think is interesting. And I'm not sure how to feel about it, because it's like, at the end of the day, they both did commit some really horrible crimes. Like, what is Michael Bay trying to do here? It feels like he's trying to say something political. I mean, his movies are always political. They're always steeped in some sort of military...
And police reverence.
Reverence and all these other things about, like, what America is and, like, you know, that's what it is. But, you know, what did you make of what he seemed to be trying to do here? Does it feel different from other films he's done, whether it's Bad Boys or Armageddon or any of those other films?
When this movie ended... And I saw it in the theater. This movie ends, and this one person says to another, like, oh my God, like, that was wildly unrealistic. And I thought, this is actually one of Michael Bay's more realistic movies. Like, it kind of is. It's totally nuts, but it actually is also, like, way more grounded for him, you know? I mean, like, you know, because this is the man who made Armageddon, where they thought it would be easier to train the guys who drill to go be astronauts than to train astronauts to drill, right? Like, I mean, like, there are always such a massive, like, bananas situation happening in his movies. And, you know, even looking back at Bad Boys, which... Mm-hmm. And the second one, these guys are not, you know, really human anymore. They're practically superheroes.
Yeah.
By that standard, this is one of his more realistic movies. Like, it feels it feels like a departure for him in his own way.
That said, I'm not sure the scientific rigor extends to the surgery scene.
Oh, no. This is relative.
That cop would have been dead hours earlier.
The cop would have died 10,000 times over.
My partner is a healthcare provider, and this was a rare press screening where I was able to bring her with me, and just the sputtering noises coming out of her during some of those scenes.
The last thing I wanted to say about this movie is a remake, right? The original movie that this is based on was 76 minutes long.
Oh my gosh, that makes sense.
This movie is 136 minutes long. They added 60 minutes to this movie. But yep. I just think, like, if they had made this leaner.
Right.
If they had made this with half as many characters. Yeah, if they had just gone through the script and been like, we don't need the FBI guy. We don't need this guy. We don't need this guy. We don't need this crime boss over here.
Yeah.
We just cut all that stuff out and just make it a freaking ambulance chase. This could have been such a taut thriller. Instead, it is a movie that you, if it's still in theaters, by the time you're going to the theater for the air conditioning, this is the kind of movie you're getting at.
I think for me, when it came down to it, I really wanted to just, you know, like I said, be able to kind of turn off my brain, strap in, and enjoy. There's stupid fun, and then there's just, like, stupid.
Yeah.
And for me, I wanted stupid fun, and I was just like, ugh.
It was very stupid because, as we've already noted, so many other cops were probably killed and we only cared about this one.
So many.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Well, we want to hear what you feel and think about Ambulance. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. And up next, we'll be talking about what's making us happy this week. And now it's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, What's Making Us Happy? Daisy, let's start with you.
So March Madness just wrapped up about a week ago. It's been great to see the women's NCAA players get far more attention this year than they've gotten in the past. And an even more fun thing that happened with that was that WNBA legends Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi co-hosted a mega cast, which is the kind of the live sports cast that's like on a secondary ESPN mm-hmm. channel. They do it with the Mannings. You may have heard of this in football. You know, it's like you can watch the regular game or you can watch a couple of pros kind of do a casual, fun kind of take of play-by-play. And so Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi, who go all the way back to UConn, where they played together and are literally both still legends who are playing in the WNBA, co-hosted, and they're real life best friends. And it was so fun. I love watching women's sports. It's just been so great to just see it get more and more accessible over these last couple of years, but especially this last year. So that is Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi hosting the mega cast for ESPN for the NCAA Women's March Madness.
Nice. I know very little about sports generally, but Diana Taurasi, I'm from Connecticut, and yes. I grew up at the time when the UConn Huskies women team was like unstoppable, basically. Unstoppable. I think they still kind of are.
Still pretty great.
Yeah. We loved her. And my grandfather, he loved the UConn Huskies. So yay, go Diana. Danny, what's making you happy this week?
Yeah, I've been catching up on albums of the year, and the one that I just keep turning again and again to and listening to is the new album by Sasami. The album is named Squeeze.
Yes.
Sasami is an artist out of Los Angeles. She was in the band Cherry Glazer for a bit. Sasami's new album, Squeeze, is her second. It came out in late February, and some of the songs, you know, are influenced by 90s and early aughts new metal songs like you might hear on the Matrix soundtrack. The songs that I really like more, you know, wouldn't feel out of place on the new Big Thief album, like the song Tried to Understand, or might sound like a Wise Blood song, a song called Call Me Home, these sort of nice folky or synthy tracks. And I want to shout out Make It Right, which we can hear a little bit of now. Another day without peace of mind inside. What's there to say when there's nothing left to say to make it right? It's the, I think, one that balances all the sounds on the album really, really well. And it's an earworm. I just can't get it out of my head.
Yeah, I love hearing this album getting more love. I talked about this album on the show a few weeks ago, and it's one of my favorites of 2022 so far. So I'm delighted that people are hearing it and loving it as much as I do. It's so good.
Well, thank you. So that's Squeeze by Sasami. Steven, let us know what's making you happy.
They just announced this week the release of a new album by the wonderful Kentucky singer-songwriter Joan Shelley, who is one of my favorite artists in the entire world. Joan Shelley's records always seem to come out at anxious points in American life, perhaps because every point in American life is anxious, and if you put out an album at any time, it will serve that purpose. This record, it comes out on June 24th. It's called The Spur. And Joan Shelley just dropped the first single from the record. And the whole album is about, like, retreating during the pandemic. She, like, retreated to her home on a farm in Kentucky with her husband as she was pregnant with their first child. It's all this, like, you know, I reflected on my life and what matters. And the music is so soothing and her voice is so calming. Let's hear a little bit of that song, The Spur.
We'll put our feet in the sky. Rip them free from the ground, and we'll dance like we're high.
So if you're like me, you were probably overstimulated from all that talk of ambulance, and now you are able to go into the rest of your day with a sense of contentment and comfort.
Nice. Thank you very much, Stephen. So what if the Parent Trap, but a reality dating show?
What? Say more.
Oh my.
So that would be a show that I became obsessed with called My Mom, Your Dad on HBO Max.
Yes.
There's no twins involved, but basically the premise is this. A bunch of college-age kids bring their single parents to a house called the Second Chance Retreat. It's like somewhere in California, this beautiful giant house, whatever. They drop their parents off to go and meet other parents and mingle and do all that stuff that people do on dating shows. But the catch is the kids are in a house just down the road living together also, and they are watching everything that happens with their parents, and they get to meddle and set their parents up on dates with each other and like turn the sprinklers on your parents that like while they're in the middle of talking. And the parents don't know that it's their, they think there's like some random dating consultants who are, you know, making all these choices and giving them these challenges. But no, it's their kids.
Oh my God.
It's a show that doesn't really have a villain. It's a, like a sort of sweet-natured show where all these kids just want their parents to be happy. I love a cheesy dating reality show. This kind of scratched my itch for a new one. It's 8 episodes long. Give it a try. It's called My Mom, Your Dad, and it's on HBO Max. That's what's making me happy this week. If you want links for what we recommended, plus some more recommendations, you can sign up for our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you, Stephen Thompson, Danny Hensel, and Daisy Rosario for being here to talk about, one more time, Ambulance! This episode was produced by Candace Lim and Ramel Wood and edited by Mike Katziff. And Hello Come In provides the music you are definitely bobbing your head to right now. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Aisha Harris, and we'll see you all next week.